This is the United States Eventing Association's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Chris Stafford. And on this week's episode, we continue our previews of this year's Rio Olympic Games. We'll be hearing from the course builders later on, Tyson Remeter and Levi Rickhart. But we begin with Pierre Michelet, the course designer for this year's Rio Olympic Games, and he joins us now. Hello, Pierre. Welcome to the program.
Yes.
Well, first of all, we want to introduce you to our audience with a little bit of background, if you would, Pierre, on some of the biggest courses that you've built in your career and what you're most proud of.
I have built 2 years ago the World Equestrian Games, and before twice the Senior European Championship, once in Fontainebleau and at Pau. And also some young riders and junior European championships and pony European also for the FAI.
So having the task of the Rio Olympic Games for you would be a career highlight then, I'm sure.
Yes, sure. I'm very proud to have this job.
So let's talk a little bit about your preparation then, Pierre, for this. Had you been to Rio before? Had you been looking at courses before you got this job?
Not before to have the job, but I'm working with them for 3 years since the beginning, because at first I was working with an architect company in charge of all the aspects of the Equestrian Games, and after with the company, the course building company, and at the end with the course designer, with the course builder for properly the course for eventing.
Now, when did you first visit Rio and look at the landscape and begin your planning for this, Pierre?
I think 2 years ago.
And how many times have you been there now?
Maybe 8 times now. At the beginning of the project, I've been three times, and after the nomination of the course builder, I have been there with 4 times with them. It's a James Willis company who are building badminton, who are in charge of the course building, who win the tender of the course building.
Now, when you first saw the location, the venue, Pierre, what were your impressions that would help you develop the style of the course?
My impression was very good, because it was not the first time that a competition was at this place. Before, they organized with Sue Benson as course designer the Pan American Games some years ago, and Mike Etherington-Smith has been there also for a project 10 years before or 5 years before, I don't know. So no. We have already a lot of tracks created, and now I have done 2 new water jumps and create some different features, but we don't start from a white sheet.
Right. So when you look at a course for the or a track for the first time to develop your course, Pierre, you're probably looking at obviously the terrain and the type of footing, the ground, the soil, and also the natural materials, the native materials you have to work with. Talk a little bit about all of those things and how they influenced your design.
Yes, at first the footing was a bit hard, and so they have done a lot of work for improving the footing, like with vertibraining, and also they have put pipes all along the course for watering the course. And they have called a footing expert and a golf greenkeepers for having a better turf. They are improving a lot the quality of the footing. And after with Willis Brother, we have bought some wood in Brazil and a lot. And we have also decoration done by flowers and plants of Brazil, done by a girl who has a company of decoration.
And how many portable fences would you have then, Pierre, compared to the permanent fences that were already being used there?
Almost half and half.
Right.
Because it's more useful to have portable fences in combination. So at the last moment, we can play with the distance, with the angle, with to make more sophisticated distance, and to talk also with, of course, with a technical delegate, and where we can have an input stronger with portable fences. When you have one portable fence in a combination, it's easier to play with the distance, with the difficulty of the combination.
And what were the main challenges for you when you saw that venue and how it had been used and how you would like to use it?
I know that it's impossible to make everybody happy, but for the Olympic Games, we need to have a very fair result and a very good result seen by the outside world.
And of course, with every Olympic Games or every major championship, the designer is looking for a theme to be in keeping with the traditions and culture of the country. Was there anything that really stood out for you that you wanted to use of the Rio theme that you can share with us? Maybe not too many secrets, I know, but is there anything you can share with us?
Yes, but we use a lot of material from the country, and brushes and everything from the country, decoration from the country. And also we show a lot of different monuments of Rio to give a reflect of the country hosting the Olympics.
And for anyone that's going to visit the course there and watch the games, Pierre, what can they expect of the terrain? Is it hilly? Is it fairly flat? What is the elevation and the climate at that time of year?
Yes, I'm very happy about the track at my first visit, because it's never flat. It's not very hilly, but never flat. So it's easy to have a balance equation during the course. And I think it's a good challenge. And for the climate, it's like in summer in France. It's about 25 degrees. Last year we had the test event with 22, 25 degrees. It was very, very nice temperature.
And what did you learn from the test event that you may have changed, or you may have different ideas going forward when you finalize the course, Pierre?
No. The test event was not very significant, because we had just horses from Brazil. But it runs very well, and everybody seems very happy of the ground and of everything.
Now, going forward then, with just a few weeks to go, really, before the games, we're getting in the closing couple of months here before you go for the final preparation. What will you need to do now? Will you have to make separate trips before the games, Pierre?
Now I have to put the combination in place with the technical delegate for my last but one visit, and decide exactly the decoration and the flowers and all the roping and everything. And I will leave, and after, the course building company will stay 30 days more, and they will finalize all the details, and I will come back 5 days before the grand jury visit.
And what have you enjoyed most of all about this particular career challenge, really, Pierre, of building an Olympic Games in South America?
I don't know. I'm very pleased to do this. Rio is a fantastic town. I have built already some courses in Brazil, in Argentina. I know well South America, and it's a pleasure for me and an honor to have this job.
Any final comments that you would like to add for our membership of what they can look forward to at your Rio Olympic Games course?
I hope that everybody will enjoy to attend this competition.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed, Pierre, for coming on the program, and the very best of luck with your first Olympic course.
Yes, thanks. Bye.
Joining me now are the two course builders for the Rio Olympic Games, Levi Rickovat and Tyson Rementa, and they join me actually down in Ocala, Florida, preparing for the fall event, the new fall event. So welcome, guys, to the program.
Hey, thanks for having us, Chris.
Thank you.
So we are going to be talking about Rio because I know you were down there for the test event. We've heard from Pierre Michelet about what he has in store in terms of design. But let's start with you, Tyson, and what you actually learned when you went down there for the test event. How many times had you been prior to the event itself?
Well, Levy and I's first trip down for the test event was my first time going down to Rio. We spent maybe a little more than a month there prior to the test event working with James Willis and the Willis brothers, who had built the portable fences ahead of time at their shop there in the UK. And that was probably the greatest experience so far, is getting an opportunity to work with the famous Willis brothers, the builders of Biomethan, and that was quite exciting for a guy from the United States who's been building primarily in the U.S. Most of his life. It was good exposure to travel abroad and work with that caliber of builders.
Well, you're both now have got quite the reputation for the team, of course, builders around the world, literally. I mean, you're international stars in the sport, really. So let's turn to you, Levi. Tell us a little bit about how you as a team, you two, got together. I mean, were you always, you know, as little boys, handy with a chainsaw and wanting to be builders? So how did that come about?
Yeah, so actually I grew up in Belgium. My dad organizes a 1-2-3 star since 1980, and I was born in 1980, so I saw the Willis brothers at work at a very young age and watched them use chainsaws, and it's always something I wanted to do, and I helped them out at a very young age. It's ever since I started walking, actually, so... And I just followed them around and actually worked with them in England for several years and then went my own way and moved to the U.S. and been building here ever since, probably since 2007. Then I met Tyson a few years ago and started working with him at Red Hills International. And then ever since then, we've been working on all these international projects like the Jockey Club and Caroline International. And now we're headed to Rio, so it's getting busier and busier every year, so...
I can imagine. So how many courses would you be responsible for then in the course of a year?
That we do together, probably half a dozen to eight, and separately. I mean, Tyson probably does I don't know how many Tyson does a year, but altogether probably like a dozen to 15.
Right, that's a lot of chainsawing, guys. Well, let's go back to Rio. We're just a few weeks away now. How often will you need to go back before you actually go down for the games?
Our next trip will be starting early July, and that'll carry us right on through to the games. This has been our third trip down to Rio. Like I said, the bulk of the portables have been built in the UK, but all the on-site building there we've done over the course of 3 month-long trips or so. And so we've spent quite a bit of time in Rio de Janeiro, but we're learning to get around.
I'm sure you are, getting around the language and the communication and the transport and all the rest of it in time. So when you get down there then, Tyson, how long will you be there for the games?
Just over a month.
So let's talk about what this involves now, because obviously having been to the test event, Levi, you've got a sense of what materials are available. I mean, you'll probably be looking for as much natural material and you know, to blend in with the environment. Obviously, some of the portables will need decorating, and that, you know, there's all the different components, isn't there, to actually getting from the raw materials to the finished product. So talk about what you look for in terms of those materials and how accessible the materials have actually been to you.
Well, some of the materials were shipped over in containers from England, like pine logs, stuff like that, because you can't really get pine in Brazil. But we've been looking to find some local trees, like really big red hardwoods I've been using for... There's a lot of log jumps with the crazy railing for all the unjumpable jumps, and it's been a challenge to find it, though eventually we found a source where we can get some really cool local trees, like maybe even some from the Amazon that we can use on the course. So there's a lot of natural obstacles, but most of the portables are actually being shipped over from England. But we are building a massive suspension bridge, which all the materials will be coming from the area. It's really hard and heavy wood, so not easy to work with, but I'm sure it'll look beautiful when it's all finished.
Yeah, I mean, that must be a challenge. I'm sure you look for those kind of challenges, though, to work with the local material, Tyson, you know, and see what you can make out of it. Because really, at the end of the day, it does look stunningly beautiful what you create. But there's a heck of a lot of work goes into it. As you said, working with hard materials, Levi. But Tyson, talk a little bit about, you know, how you plan out the building it. Once it's designed, once Pierre decides that's it, this is what you've got to work with, talk us through those next steps. Do you just go by each segment of the course, or do you look at the overhaul course and what needs more preparation, so you need a longer lead-in time to prepare the terrain around the fences?
Well, it's just like anything. I mean, once you've received the design from the designer, that's when things start to get fun, and you get to add your own artistic flair to it. And the Olympics really provide a special opportunity to add a lot of unique one-off fences that you're not going to see on a regular basis. And to get involved in the Brazilian wildlife and incorporate that into a lot of the sculptures, doing the research behind that and what animals are around, how can we incorporate those into fences, that has been a lot of fun. One of the biggest challenges, like we talked about with the wood, finding. So I was very excited to go to Brazil, thinking that we were going to work with a lot of these exotic species of hardwood. Brazilian wood is a highly sought after commodity, but I think we all realized pretty quickly when we got down there it wasn't exactly what we'd expected. We broke more drill bits and bent more nails and snapped off more screws trying to deal with this. I mean, it's absolutely rock hard concrete material, and we came to the realization pretty quickly that a lot of the material would need to be shipped in. But there's quite a bit of carving and artistic work that's gone into it, and it was evident pretty early on that it was going to be long going trying to carve into some of these big hard Brazilian hardwoods. So it's been a challenge, but it's been a lot of fun. I mean, just exploring around Rio de Janeiro and finding tools, drills and chainsaws, and we ended up down by the docks in a seedy part of town and found the coolest little chainsaw shop to supply some of the tools that we needed. That's the biggest difference between working here in the States. You know where everything is, you know how quickly you can get everything, but there was a massive learning curve in Brazil as to how long it was going to take to accomplish any one part of the project.
Well, that must be the fun part of it, as you say, getting all those parts together. And for someone that works in wood, when you mean by hard wood and breaking bits and stuff, you know, is it harder than walnut, for example, to drill into?
Oh my goodness, it's harder than concrete to drill into. I mean,
oh
it was some of the logs that we found were absolutely impossible. I mean, it was everything that we could do for two guys to lift a single board up. But it certainly has been an adventure. But it makes for a really cool finished look. It's going to be something that's pretty unique.
I can well imagine that, you know, the satisfaction of all of that from start to finish. So, Levi, tell us a little bit about what tools you have to take down there. How prepared do you have to be before you get on site with materials? Do you take all your tools as much as you can carry? Will they let you carry drill bits into Brazil?
Well, the bulk of the tools, like chainsaws, which you obviously aren't allowed to bring on the plane, are brought in by the Willis brothers, because they're shipping in containers with the jumps, so they try and squeeze as many tools on the container with the jumps as possible, so we don't have to go around finding all these tools and equipment. So Tyson and I, were allowed to bring two bags on the plane, so we bring one bag of clothes and one bag of the drill bits, maybe even some corded tools. So we try to bring as much as possible, but obviously there's certain things we cannot bring on a plane, which is like shovels and rakes, but I'm sure we can find that over there. And we have found some hardware stores, and there's some pretty funny stories, like with the language barrier, obviously. Like they love it when we come to the store and we try and translate. We're working on our Portuguese.
I can imagine, yes, and also can also imagine that you would be frowned upon for bringing some tools in. They would wonder what on earth you're going to do with a shovel and a rake.
Actually, it's been really easy traveling to and from Brazil. People, they don't really care at the border and what you bring in and what you don't bring in.
From the United States, one of the things you don't even bother to think about ahead of time is the outlets that your cords plug into. And coincidentally, all of our U.S. tools work right off the shelf into the Brazilian outlets, but none of the tools that come from the UK will plug right in. So we've done a lot of on-site electrical work.
Oh, right. So, well, that's an advantage. Tyson, if you would talk a little bit more about what the Willis brothers, who, of course, are well-known in the sport for being the builders at Babington Horse Trials. Now, they are part of this team of you. So how many of you are on that course-building team, and what do they do apart from making sure you've got all the materials in terms of fences and so on from England? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, well, James Willis has really been the team leader of the whole construction project, and which has been fantastic. I don't know, Levy would know better than I, but this is probably the Willis' fourth Olympic Games now. So they're very experienced. They know their way around, and it's great to be sort of under their tutelage while we're there in terms of orchestrating something as big as an Olympic Games.
Levi, how many are you altogether on the team then that will be down there in Rio?
Well, James said we should have six people there at all times, and one of those is actually a local guy who's a designer as well. It's Ollie Oliveira or something, I'm not sure. Yep. But Tyson and I are there always, so two of us, one translator, and then three of the Willis Brothers team. It's always James Willis will always be there, and then it will be one of his brothers or one of his cousins.
So in terms of planning, yep, then, leading up to cross-country, or really the start of the event when the TDs are going to be walking around that course, and you'll have some final changes to make perhaps or not. Yep. But then leading up to that deadline, if you will, when would the course be actually ready? When do you actually plan and say, okay, we have to be finished, we have to have done everything by this, you know, T-minus how many days?
Well, usually for an international event, as you know, you have to be ready the Tuesday before the event. So I'd imagine a few more days before that. I'd like to be finished well over a week before the first horse on the course, I'd imagine. But for the actual week leading up to the Olympics, we'll be bringing in a half a dozen more guys some of them are volunteering to come help. We have a guy from Belgium coming over. We have a guy from New Zealand coming over. And a few more English hands on deck as well that the Willis brothers are bringing over. So there'll be plenty of guys there to help make sure it all goes to plan and it's all ready before the first horse.
Do you rely on any volunteers? Sorry, go ahead, Tyson.
I was going to say that was just speaking of time frame. That was quite a funny story that came out of the test event. Was I don't think that everyone is well aware that a lot of things in Brazil happen at the very last minute, and horses were on property and doing their dressage tests while Levy was sitting on an excavator preparing the footing in the water jumps there. So it really did come down to the wire at the test event. So hopefully we learned something from that. We'll have it prepared well ahead of time for the actual games.
How many water complexes are there altogether?
There are three. We had two that were sort of holdovers from the Pan American Games that needed a bit of modifying, and then the last water complex is quite a big, spectacular water jump there right in the middle of the property. So there'll be three altogether.
Levi, what have you most enjoyed about this particular project, this challenge, and the local culture and materials? And as from a course builder's perspective, what has been the most fun and challenging for you about this one?
I think that it's different. You know, you're expecting everything to go as smoothly as it does working in the U.S. or Europe, but it's the people, first of all, like, I mean, the way they work, and it's been a bit of a challenge and sometimes a little bit frustrating, but I think that's all part of it. And I think I was always looking for somewhere different to work. You know, if every day you work, your work is the same and there's no challenges, it's boring. So I think just the culture, the landscape of things, and just generally that it's different from the U.S., for example.
And Tyson, how about you? What have you most enjoyed about the landscape, the soil, the environment, you know, the actual on the boots on the ground there? What has been the most fun for you so far?
Well, I was going to move away from the venue, actually, and say that the most entertaining part for me was our proximity to the beach. It's not very often that you get to work that close to a world-famous beach. We stay about two blocks from Copacabana. The drive to the venue every day is always exciting. But again, working in a major city, that's another opportunity that you don't stumble upon every day. And that's something that is unique to the Olympic Games in general. Something that's going to set set this event apart from other Olympics, where maybe sometimes the cross-country, the equestrian venues are quite away from the rest of the Olympic Games. Here in Rio de Janeiro, we're smack dab in the middle of the city, which is unique and fun and what the Olympics are all about.
Well, that leads me very nicely into the final question then, Tyson. You set yourself up for this, because I know our listeners who are planning to go there will be wondering, you know, what should they be prepared for? Some of the do's and don'ts and the things to be ready for if you're going to go to this year's Olympics?
You probably shouldn't be asking Tyson this question.
we get ourselves into all kinds of trouble. I would say, and what I've been telling people all along is don't necessarily believe the hype. We've had a very enjoyable time in Rio de Janeiro. The people are friendly. They're very, very helpful. I haven't contracted Zika virus as to this point, so that's obviously been a concern in the national news. We're going to do everything we can to sort of protect ourselves from that. But we've had a lot of Rio is no different from any other major city. Maybe it has a bit more poverty here and there, but I think if you're planning to come to the games, plan to have a good time, plan for it to be an adventure. Give yourself plenty of time to get to and from places. But other than that, you're going to have a lot of fun.
Okay, Levi, you have to talk about the mosquitoes then, because when you're out there on the course, there must be the local wildlife that you really don't want to get too close to.
Actually, I was expecting more bugs and nasty, creepy crawlers when I went there, and it really hasn't been that bad. I'm standing in a field here in Ocala, and there's a lot more biting me than there is in Rio.
And there's monkeys there, man. I mean, how can you go wrong with monkeys? The monkeys counteract the mosquitoes.
And parrots and... No, I really haven't experienced, like, the whole Zika thing. I honestly haven't. I've seen a couple of mosquitoes, but I haven't been bitten the way I've been gotten bitten here in Ocala. Definitely so. and it's going to be winter, Sarah, so bring some warm clothes. Definitely when you're on the road and when you're in traffic, practice patience. And the first couple of days was quite frustrating going to work and back. It's going to take a little while, but you'll get there in the end and play a game on your phone and try not to get lost.
And then play another game. Absolutely. Well, when you're done with Rio, you're coming back to Ocala to the Jockey Club there, where you're working on the course for the first 3-star event there this fall. So we look forward to that. Thank you guys very much indeed for coming on the program and sharing your experiences. The very best of luck and enjoy Rio, the beach as well, Tyson.
Thank you so much, Chris. It was our pleasure.
And on future episodes, in our lead up to the Rio Games, we'll be hearing from more people behind the scenes to this year's event. But that's it for this week's program. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, of course, keep up with all the latest news, and on the website at useventing.com. These podcasts are available for download from the iTunes podcast store to any podcast app on your mobile device. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world, and enjoy your eventing.